Welcome to another edition of the Pewter Nation Podcast. I'm Mark Cook, joined by the man bun himself, Mr. Trevor Sikkema.
Hello, hello.
And, of course, longtime publisher, Mr. Scott Reynolds. Hi, Scott.
How are you today?
Wait a second.
You always do this. You always introduce our guest as Scott, and it's just the most different
Scott.
Voice than Scott.
Yeah, you couldn't have two different voices.
You really couldn't.
Bodies.
Or bodies, yes. Or career paths.
Correct.
Yes, definitely, no doubt about it. If you've been in the Tampa Bay area very long, then you certainly recognize that voice. That is former Buccaneer player Mr. Ian Beckles, who has been a longtime media personality in the Bay Area. Was with 620 for a long time. Now has segments on 102.5 The Bone, doing daily mornings hits. Five to six every day. He hosts a couple of his own podcasts that Trevor and I have both been on. But anyway, just a good guy, a good friend of Pewter Report. Ian, how are you, man? How are things?
I'm doing fabulous. Trying to stay omnipresent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just waiting for the draft and waiting to for the Bucks this year to convince me they're good and before me making them good in the offseason like I did last year.
And myself included. I think I picked them to be 12-4.
It's crazy now, right?
Yeah. No, you did. You did. I'm not going to let you forget. You did.
Yeah.
12-4. Well, at the end of the year, there's no more than two teams that are 12-4.
I know.
And the Bucks certainly were not talented.
You
got to
be a good-ass football team to go 12-4.
And have a lot of luck and not have injuries and everything fall in place to go 12-4. You're right. I mean, this team that won a Super Bowl, what did they win? Did they win 12 regular season games?
Yes,
11?
I think so.
One year they might have.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not easy. It's not easy to do. And if you do, then you're good chance you're going to be in the big dance at the end anyway, competing for an opportunity for a Super Bowl trophy. But Ian, you know, I don't know that I find it funny. It's probably not the right word. But, you know, a lot of guys get out of football, and they get away from football. We've been with some of your former teammates who we've had at different events and things like that, and they're like, you know, I don't really follow the team that much anymore. But, you know, I know that because you were on radio doing sports talk and you're still on radio now, you know, it was kind of part of your job. But I have a feeling if you would have got out of football and sold insurance, you're just a football fan, right?
That's a fact. I mean, there's different calibers of athletes. I love football. Like, that's what I did my whole life. Mm-hmm. I think I survived in the league because I loved football, not because I was all that talented. I think I worked hard. I think I played hard. But the fact that I loved the game of football, to me, I thought took me to another level. And there's people that play, there's people that could succeed, and then there's students as well. Mm-hmm. I think I consider myself a student of the game because I don't know anybody that watch as much film as I did. Like, I enjoyed watching film. I enjoyed knowing what to expect, and it made my job easier.
And that's back when, I don't know, I think guys probably watch more film today because it's more readily available. You know, you certainly have the iPads and the things like that. Guys can take
stuff
home.
Media guys certainly watch more film because it's available.
But back in your day, you had to make a designated time to go in a film room in the old Correct. One Buccaneer place on your own time to watch film, right?
Well, you know, Dave Levy was the video guy back then, and I would go see him on Monday after the game, and he would have some VHS tapes for me, and I would bring them home.
Right.
But, you know, now I hear that these players are watching film on the way back from a game.
Yeah. On the plane. Yeah.
Like, I literally would sit down. I would get my full-size Snickers. I would have – it depends who I was playing for. I might have a cocktail beside me if maybe Ray Rhodes is my coach, not so much Tony Dungy. And I would sit there and I would watch film all the way home, I promise you. Just to get, you know, a step up on everybody else, because I don't think you can watch too much film. It's impossible.
You know, you bring up the fact that you love the game of football, and I brought it up on this podcast before and I've written about it, but I think the most revealing thing that I took from last year at Hard Knocks was one scene, and I think it was almost a throwaway scene.
Was it the scene where Chris Baker was humping the palm tree?
That was awesome, by the way. By the way, there's a video. I saw a girl on Facebook. She was completely wasted at one
I don't know where this is going, folks.
EDM concerts. She was literally making love to a palm tree, and I could not stop watching that clip. I'm going to have to tweet that out.
That was one of
Chris Baker.
No, it wasn't Chris Baker. Well, I should send it to Chris Baker.
That was one of his two tackles last year.
Oh,
man.
Ouch. No, it's real, though.
No, that was serious. You're right. It was one of his most physical encounters of the entire year. But one of the most moments that really stuck out to me was at one point, Jameis, I think it was talking to Peyton Barber and a couple guys. I think they were in the trainer's room. And he was talking about growing up in Alabama and loving football. And he talked about there's some guys who play football because they're good at it.
I remember.
And then there's some guys who play it because it's just they would play it if they didn't get paid for it.
Correct. Yeah. Now, like I understand when people say the love of the game, and I love the game. And but when you say they're playing for the love of the game, that might be getting a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you get to this level, I wouldn't have played for free.
Right, right. Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
After the first year, I'd be like, I'm not doing that for free.
Yeah.
Although I did it for free my whole life.
Right, right.
To have the ability to make a lot of money to play football. And everybody else asked me, what was it like playing the NFL? Was it fun? And I just started laughing. Like, what is fun about that? This is a job.
Yeah.
And if you if you're a secretary and you fail, your boss cusses you out or whatever. You know, if you guys mess up, Scott might get on you. If I mess up, I'm getting physically abused in front of millions of people.
Sure.
So fun is not the word I would use.
Right.
It's a job. It's a challenge. And it's not for everybody.
When you look back on it, though, do you see where there was some fun? I mean, we talked to retired players. The number one thing they say, Mike Allstott said it, Gramatica said it, they miss not maybe the 60 minutes on the field, but the teammates, the camaraderie, sure, the bond that you have as mm-hmm. a football team, right?
Well, that you'll never lose that, but you can get that bond from other things as well. Mm-hmm. I believe you can. Football players are like-minded. A guy like Mike also, you can see he enjoyed the game. Obviously, Martin Gramatica enjoyed the game. And no, I just said that, you know, it's not fun. And ironically, last time I saw Rob Taylor, and I played next to Rob Taylor, he was a right tackle. I probably played next to him in 3 years or so. The last time there was an event at One Buck Place, he said, he looked at me and he goes, you know what's funny? I go, what? He goes, you were the only guy I ever played with that looked like they were always having fun. And I go, really? He goes, yeah, you were always having fun. And I think almost when I'm on the field, I'm almost outside myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even really know how I'm acting half the time. But there's times where you're getting your butt kicked out there. I know I wasn't having a whole lot of fun because there's a lot of places I would have rather been than being in New Orleans down 3 touchdowns trying to block Frank Warren. That wasn't a lot of fun.
Toughest player you ever faced?
Keith Hamilton.
Yeah?
Kicked my ass. Once.
Right.
But that was enough? That was enough?
Why only played against him once?
Okay, yeah, I was going to say.
But it was enough.
But you remember him.
Oh, yeah, man. Like, if he walked in this door right now, I'd go, oh, I would probably cower. And I'm not scared of much. Frank Warren ate my lunch one time. I think he's passed since. I had troubles against rangy, long defensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
Like Frank Warren, 6'6", 6'7". Keith Hamilton, 6'6".
Right.
Trevor Price, those guys. And it's not like I was the only one having problems with these guys.
Right.
Those guys were just pretty darn hard to block.
Best player maybe that you didn't go up against, but I think you've mentioned a guy like Reggie White before.
Yeah, well, I butted heads with Reggie a lot. And when I'm evaluating the players of today, that's who I'm comparing them to.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between Reggie White and a lot of these players today that they're saying are good is that Reggie was always there. Reggie didn't get pushed back. If you ran the ball near Reggie, he made the tackle. Reggie never took a game off, and he was always present. Now, there's very few defensive players now in the league that are always present.
Mm-hmm.
I think Khalil Mack is one where I watched Khalil Mack play. I go, gosh darn it. Like, you know, the kid from the Rams, Donald.
Oh, Aaron Donald, yeah.
He's always there.
Yeah.
He's always there. So, but there's not a lot of players like that. John Randall, Reggie White, Howie Long, Chester McLaughlin, those kind of guys like that, they never disappeared ever.
Did you play in a – was there a more talented era of defensive linemen, you think, when you played than right now? I mean, you don't see – there's not a Warren Sapp in this league. I mean, I guess Aaron Donald would be the closest to a Warren Sapp, you know,
no
quick
way.
Penetrate. But
no way.
But closest to it. But, I mean, talk about the difference in the talent levels from the era that you played. And tell people what years that you played in the league.
I played 90 through 99. Mm-hmm. And I would put my resume up against anybody that ever played the game at any era,
mm-hmm.
as far as who I blocked.
Sure.
Because if you look right now, if I were to say to you, how many defensive linemen right now do you think in the league as we stand are going to make it in the Hall of Fame? How many names can you give me?
That's what I was just getting to. I don't. I mean, there's a handful, but I'd have to really think about it. There's not. I mean, you talk about a Chris Dolman, a Keith Millard, you know, the Warren Sapps of the world. There was an era of defensive linemen, whether it be on the edge or inside, that were household name football players. And there's not a lot of that. It's more of the offensive guys. And I know that's what the league kind of gears their product towards. But it was just a different era and a different time. And it goes through cycles, I'm sure.
Sure.
I mean, in 10 years, we may be in another golden age of defensive linemen.
I don't know if it's ever going to be that again because that bar is set so high.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I played for Philadelphia, Leon Lett played for the Cowboys. Okay. Dan Wilkinson played for the Redskins.
Right.
He was the first pick in the draft. Eric Swan played for the Cardinals. Now, Eric Swan's a name you don't hear much, but if you blocked him, you would bring him up. Okay,
right.
Like I saw Eric Swan. Like ask Jason Odom how good Eric Swan is.
Mm-hmm.
Like ask Jorge Diaz how good Eric Swan is. Like we played when I was in Philadelphia. We played the Cardinals the week after the Buccaneers played them. And Juan Castillo was our offensive line coach. And then he turned into the coordinator later on. But he came up to me, he goes, Beck, come in here. And he goes, I just watched the Cardinals film. And it looked like he was going to cry because he coached Jorge Diaz in college. And he goes, Beck, Eric Swan killed him every play.
Right.
He couldn't block him.
Right.
He couldn't block him.
Right.
And it got to a point where defensive ends that were real effective, and I could bring a bunch of them up, Eric Swan being one, Reggie White being another, they would put them inside because they were closer to the ball.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they would do funky stuff like put them on the nose. Now, if you put, you know, Eric Swan on the nose and you walk up two linebackers on the guards, the center's on his own. You ain't snapping that ball with one hand and blocking that big, strong settling gun. You're just not.
Right.
I just brought this up the other day. The Buccaneers want to get a little innovative this year because I'm tired of watching the same crap.
Preach.
It seems we have a different defensive line this year. I don't know if the mentality is different. If I had the team that we had right now, I would go out, okay? I would go get Shaquin Griffin, who I think would be a perfect fit with the Buccaneers. Don't know if it'd be second round, third round, don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I would go get that kid that has the most incredible motor. I would put Gerald McCoy on the nose and nickel, and I would walk around Quan Alexander, Levante David, Shaquin Griffin. How much speed do we have now?
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden there's mismatches all over the place. Right. And Gerald McCoy, his thing is one move real quick. If he doesn't make the move, then he's done.
Right.
That's perfect on the center.
Amen.
So I'm tired of watching the same boring stunts being run poorly.
There's no reason that you have to – that like there's no rules against being that creative.
There's no rules.
Like, just because a guy is listed as a defensive end doesn't mean you can't swing him. Like you said, like an example, like just almost put him heads up against the center.
Yep.
So especially when you know it's a passing down.
Correct.
You know, when things become almost, you know, those obvious quote unquote passing downs, I don't understand why teams don't get more creative with what they do.
Unless you have crazy talent.
Right, obviously. You know? And you could just play straight up against somebody. It doesn't matter. Yeah, no question. But, I mean, you know, 2 years ago, they did the thing where even a little bit of creativity, where you're kicking Robert Ayers inside and he's playing three tech and Jarrell was playing almost like a one tech on third and longs.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that proved to be a problem for a lot of teams. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like they just didn't do that stuff last year.
Nope.
And so many teams around the NFL, they just play like straight up, and I don't understand why you don't get more creative. I mean, it's length, like you said, throwing things at certain players that they're not going to expect.
Correct.
A different type of leverage here, a different type of pass rushing thing here. Like, why would you not do everything you could to confuse an offensive line?
And the scouting reports are there. You know, we're in the middle of doing all of our draft previews, and Trevor, you've done this too. You know, I did the offensive line the other day, and there's 100 scouting reports out there. This guy struggles with long guys. This guy doesn't block short, compact guys because he didn't have good bend.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are essentially amateur scouts. They might call themselves professional scouts, but shit, they're writing on the internet, so they're not working for a team. So the scouting reports out there, they can see it. You sometimes wonder why, you know, teams, particularly this defense last year, you know, didn't kind of use some of those same things, because obviously if some guy on the internet seeing it, watching YouTube clips, you know, these coaches can certainly see it.
And the thing is, being innovative is not that hard sometimes. And I don't see it enough. If you get a Gerald McCoy, You as a defensive line coach, you should know who Gerald excels against. You should know that.
Right.
And I say this, and I've been against Gerald McCoy for a long time. Not against him, but I've been the one
critical of him.
Very critical. Yeah. And I think it's justified. But every once in a while, I'll see a game. I go, this is a game Gerald McCoy is going to go off, and I'm usually right.
Yeah,
because he preys on weak offensive lines. And then he might disappear for two games.
Right.
But we should be looking for the weak link every single game.
Because every offensive line, I mean, very few are five all-pro kind of guys. If you go to the Dallas Cowboys maybe a couple years ago. But even then, they had a game last year when Adrian Claiborne had six sacks. There's a perfect example of them preying on a weak link in the offensive line.
Yep.
And let's look at the Buccaneer offensive line last year. Both guard positions were weak. I thought the tackles played fairly well. Donovan, as much as we beat him up, didn't play nearly as bad as I think some people think. But the guard position, when they were rotating Evan Smith and Kevin Pamphill, and then J.R. Sweezy had a bad time last year. I mean, you know, there are weak links on virtually every offensive line.
No doubt. And Donovan Smith, to me, he's – I don't know whether we should ride this thing out or pull the plug. Because when you watch the film on the kid, for 80% of the game, he looks like an NFL lineman. Mm-hmm. But it might be five or six plays a game where he just looks like he's never played the game before. Right. And those are the ones that scare me.
Those inconsistencies – those inconsistent five plays are exactly why Jameis Winston misses three games, or why quarterbacks get knocked out of games. And listen, I'm as sympathetic towards offensive linemen as there can be. I love DeMar Dotson. I talk to DeMar all the time. DeMar's like, I can have 70 great snaps. I screw up one time.
Yeah.
I'm on your most disappointing list.
That's correct.
You know,
yeah.
And what other group doesn't get to tap their helmet and say, I need a breather?
Well, I've said that before. I mean, first of all, we're the toughest guys out there. We never go anywhere, okay? Right. Never.
Right.
We're definitely the smartest, but that's been documented.
And the best looking.
Not going to give us that
one. No, nope. No. I remember Cozy Coleman and Paul Gruber. They weren't handsome cats.
No, there's very few of us who are handsome.
Randall McDaniel, not handsome.
Nope.
Roman Oban, nope.
Nope. There's really not very many of us.
I got to admit, Charles McRae was a decent-looking young man, huh?
He was better-looking than his
you
game.
You got that right.
His game,
awful.
Though. Yeah, really
absolutely
bad.
Absolutely awful.
Real bad. I got some good Charles McRae stories. I mean, I remember Chuck Smith.
Yeah.
Chuck Smith was defensive end for the Atlanta Falcons, and a good one, great rusher. And the story was when Chuck Smith was at Tennessee, it was Charles McRae was one of the tackles, and Anton Davis was the other tackle.
Wow.
And he was also a first-round pick.
Right. They're
both first-round picks. So when Chuck Smith was a junior and the scouts were out watching these linemen, Chuck Smith said, hey, guys, come and watch this. I'm a junior, and neither one of these first-rounders can block me. Come watch it. So he was just obliterating and kicking the crap out of him in practice. So here we are playing against the Falcons, and Chuck Smith's playing against Charles McRae. And he's talking to him like it's his 8-year-old son. And Charles ends up leaving the game because he got hurt, allegedly.
Right.
And Chuck goes, oh, man, don't tell me they took McRae out already. He goes, I was going to have 12 sacks on him, and I think he might have. He might have had 12 sacks on him.
That was a bad pick. I remember bad picks this team had. Eric Curry. I mean, you can go down the list of some really bad.
Eric Curry might have been a worse pick than Charles McRae. He might have been. I remember
he had five sacks one year.
What? Did he?
He had five sacks one year. That's the crazy thing. And I don't remember the last time a Buccaneer defensive end had five
but
sacks.
But that's not a lot of sacks, though.
I know.
You could fall into three sacks
you
in 16 games.
You should be able to, yes.
You know, so you got two sacks in the whole year.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But Jerry Angelo, when they drafted Charles McRae, he came up to me in the locker room and he said, Ian, we drafted a kid that's going to be a perennial All-Pro. Like, what's his name? Charles McRae from Tennessee. I'm like, cool. I thought, cool, you know. So then he came in the locker room, and somebody goes, there's Charles McRae. And I looked at him, and I go, the perennial All-Pro? I just looked at him, and I could usually look at somebody and tell if they're an athlete or not. He didn't even stand like an athlete, you know. And he definitely didn't play like an athlete. He didn't know. He had to ask me whether we were in the AFC or the NFC.
Wow.
And you're playing in the NFL.
Wow.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
Because if I'm a GM, you know, one of the first questions I ask somebody, how much you love football? How much do you love it?
Yep.
Like, nobody can excel without loving the sport. It's it's almost impossible.
Right. We talked to Jason Light today. Today is, what's today, Wednesday? I don't even know.
Thursday.
Yeah, okay, Thursday. Jason Light did his pre-draft press conference that he does annually, and we talked to him about that. But one of the things that, you know, that we've been tracking is these visits. They get 30 visits with these college guys, 30 official visits.
Hold on, can I just say something real quick? This just popped in my head. You know who that is this year that he just said where you could just look at a guy and you kind of like know?
Who?
Marcus Davenport. I've looked at Marcus Davenport both at the Senior Bowl, Combine. I've heard about some interactions that people have had with him, and NFL Network pumped this guy up. Do you know who that is? Marcus Davenport.
I do not.
Okay, he's an edge rusher. He plays for who did he play for? It wasn't Texas El Paso. It was one of those small schools in Texas.
Yeah, one of those small Texas schools.
And people talked about him at the Senior Bowl. He's just a big, long defensive end. Mm-hmm. And the NFL Network was like, "This is the best guy here. This is unbelievable. Yeah. He's an incredible pass rusher." Like, first five reps, he went up against an offensive tackle. He didn't even look like he should have been there.
He just got punched in the face.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so, like, he's long. He has pass rush moves, all this stuff. And, like, people were talking about him as a first-round pick. And, like, I just kind of listened to him in an interview. Like, the way he answers questions, I don't know, man. Again, I don't want to seem like he's hating on a guy because, like, I do this. But, like, he is a guy who – and I hope he gets, obviously, the most out of his talent. Mm-hmm. I hope he's fine. But, like, he's a dude who I look at and I'm just like – where are y'all getting this from?
Where do you
look at this guy and go, he's going to be good? What part tells you he's going to be good? That popped in my head.
There are guys who absolutely look like stud athletes. And listen, I love Quincy Black. I think Quincy Black was starting to play a little bit better before he had that major arm injury, that nerve damage in his shoulder. One of the nicest guys you'd ever meet. But when you looked at him as a physical specimen, he would scare you.
He was a freak.
He was a freak. Sabby Piscitelli looked like
WWE superstar.
That's right. Yes, he's a wrestler now. I mean,
is he really?
Yeah, he's in the WWE now.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
No, he's one notch below the WWE. He's
is that
playing
like NXT
like the
or something?
Yeah.
All right, whatever.
Yeah, no.
Whatever.
Yeah, he's not. Let's not pump him up that big.
He's a pretty boy. He's going to get to WWE.
He probably will.
You can put that dude on a poster.
But the point is, there are guys who have the look, and Scott uses the term, look like Tarzan, play like Jane.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a lot of those guys. Davenport may be
That's
one of
Davenport
those guys. Maybe
to
he's
me,
not.
Man.
Maybe
That's
he's
Davenport
not.
To me.
Charles McRae, from what you're saying, didn't look like either one. Didn't do either one.
But he was still 6'7", 310 pounds.
Yeah, right.
And he was very flexible. And he wasn't the strongest guy in the world. And he just didn't look the part for me. Because I could see a dog from a mile away. You know, we were talking earlier about mentalities, you know, the guys that excel are the ones that will look at you and just say, I'll punch you in the face. And a lot of the nice guys, it doesn't really work that way. Right. I'm going to give you a great example. When I watch film and I watch a defensive end and they show me 10 clips and in all 10 clips, the guy beat his tackle outside. It's not going to work. It's not going to work.
Right.
Gaines Adams is a perfect example. Yeah. Gaines Adams, I watched him in the Senior Bowl and he was just running around people. First of all, that looks great. None of those guys are going to play in the league. You know what's going to happen? When you try to get around the end, Walter Jones is going to be standing right there with 330 pounds of a wicked punch to punch you in the face. And after the first year I watched Gaines Adams, I go, he is not good.
Right.
He's never going to be good. He's weak. He has no inside move. And you can't run around people. And people got so mad when I was real about Gaines Adams.
Right.
I'll give you another name. Barrett Rude. People got so mad at me because he was a nice guy.
We got a lot of tackles.
He
That's
couldn't.
The thing.
He got a lot of tackles.
When people get stats, they just think they're good.
Okay, but he got a lot of tackles on a defense that couldn't stop anybody.
Right.
So if a guy has 250 yards rushing and you have 15 tackles, Barrett Rude never took on a tackle. He would just turn, run, and go tackle somebody
from behind.
15 yards.
Yep.
I go, dude, I'm used to Hardy Nickerson going straight downhill and breaking helmets. So
and then spitting at you. Afterwards.
And then and Hardy's a religious guy. He's the meanest religious guy I've ever seen. Like me and Hardy used to fight in practice all the time.
Yeah.
He broke Tony Mayberry's thumb in practice. Tony goes, "You broke my thumb." He goes, "I don't give a crap." And I was like, "You are a mean son of a bitch." He's mean. He always will be.
But talking to Jason today, and we were talking about visits. And Jason has said this that on the picks that he's missed on. He hasn't missed on the talent part. He's missed from the shoulders up or what's inside the chest.
Absolutely.
Because there's scouting is so much better than it was. I mean, they have more scouts. There's more film availability and cut-ups and things like that. So you've got all the tape in the world. So when you bring a guy in, somebody asked me about this in our mailbag on Monday, they're not bringing in a guy to see. You're not going to base your draft on what he does in this workout on the field behind what Buccaneer plays because you've got 4 years of film, right?
Correct.
You'd be foolish to base it on that. Mm-hmm. But what you're trying to do, and Jason said this again today, you're trying to get to know these guys. How mm-hmm. much do they love football? And something that he said today was, I want guys in this locker room who hate losing more than they love to win.
I've never heard that saying, but I love it mm-hmm. because I understand it wholeheartedly.
Right.
I hate to lose, and I understand what needs, and I've always said this too. Everybody always says football is a team sport, and it might be the consummate team sport. But as an individual athlete, the only way I help my team win is for me to ball out. That's not a team concept, right?
Yeah.
All I can worry about is me.
Right.
So everybody's like, what about if this player? I go, I'm not worried about that player.
Mm-hmm.
If you're struggling over there, okay, go do your thing. The coach has got to worry about that. I got to worry about me. So I got to worry about if we're playing the Arizona Cardinals, and the Arizona Cardinals are 1-10, I might be blocking Eric Swan. Who cares if they're 1-10?
Yeah.
My job's a son of a bitch.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's an individual thing. Mm-hmm. And if an athlete tells you this, they're lying to you. Ask an athlete if they would rather play Pro Bowl level and go 4-12 or go to the playoffs and struggle. Ask them. They'll lie to you. But I'm telling you, as an individual,
yeah.
I'm trying to prepare myself to kick somebody's ass for 16 weeks,
right.
and I can't worry about the rest of the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know what, Ian? If enough players do that, then that 4-12 football team is a 12-4 football team,
correct.
Right?
Correct. I mean, that's the mentality. That's the difference between the 97 through 2002 Bucks.
Right.
And what's trying to happen now is, you know, the accountability was built in.
Mm-hmm.
You just weren't going to pound your chest unless you put the film on Monday and you were a bad son of a bitch.
Right.
Like you said, Quan Alexander says, I'm the leader of this team. That was Hardy Nickerson.
Yeah.
That was Hardy Nickerson. Like you better follow. But when I put the film on, Quan's running hard, bro. All the time.
Right.
The
yeah.
first time I saw Quan Alexander, the first time, that's my guy.
Yeah.
Breaking helmets. Doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't care about his own body. Breaking helmets. And then everybody around him doesn't look like they're playing as hard.
Right.
So I have a question specifically because you talked about accountability right there. And over the last couple of years, just because obviously the team hasn't been good, they've been saying like, well, somebody needs to hold these guys accountable, blah, blah, blah. And then you said right there, accountability is something that's built in. So like, you shouldn't even have to do that hypothetically,
correct.
Right?
You have the wrong team.
Yeah. Like if you're sitting here going, I need to be more accountable, it's almost like we need different players.
I think that's what right? Jason was trying to say too, though. Mm-hmm. You know, I want those guys that hate to lose so much
yeah,
that they're going to put in the extra. They're going to do whatever they can to make sure they're doing the best they can so that the team does succeed.
So maybe that
succeed.
Does go to the, like you said, the I'd rather play good.
Now, I'm going to Ian was a guard, so we're going to ask him about Quentin Nelson and if a guard is worthy of a top 10 pick after this quick break. Which we've got to talk about one of our newest sponsors, our good friend T.A. Mahoney's over in Tampa off of Adamo. You can find them at tamahoneyco.com. They're on the web. If you have a boat, if your friend has a boat, if your boss has a boat, anybody you know that has a boat, or any really marine supplies that you need, T.A. Mahoney is the place to go. They've been in business since 1946. Ian, you and I haven't even been close to being alive since 1946. My dad wasn't even alive in 1946, and my dad's old as dirt. So they've been around, so they're doing something right, Ian. But they've got everything you need from picking up a simple pack of hooks all the way up to getting a new trailer, having work done on your boat, repairs, all of those things, full shop marine repair facility, trailer repair facility, fiberglass for your boat. They've got everything in one spot there in Tampa and have been there and serving the community since 1946.
I've been at T.A. Mahoney a few times, and I like to fish like no other. I mean, I would if I could fish every day, I
right.
would. And it's like Never Neverland. You walk in there,
yeah.
and just you just want to touch everything, and it's local.
That's right.
It's kind of like, you don't want to say mom and pops, but it has that feel to
sure.
it.
Sure, and it does. I mean, it's a family owned still business. And Mike Mahoney still runs it, and he's third generation, I believe.
My thing is, and what we're trying to accomplish here with the Flavor of Tampa Bay and our Dignitary Marketing, we're trying to show love to these local companies right. that need us. And you know, instead of going to Total Wine and Spirits, I'd rather go to a little mom and pop's wine place where you walk in, somebody knows you, they mm-hmm. know what kind of wine sure. you like, they put you in the right direction, instead of just being a statistic.
Just a number, right.
And I think that's what Mahoney's is about.
Absolutely. You nailed it. That's exactly what it is. People come in there, they become family. They're going to treat you right, they're going to take care of you, and they're going to be honest with you. If your boat doesn't need a $5,000 repair, they're going to tell you, because correct. They know... If they get you on a $500 instead of trying to rip you off for $5,000, you're going to keep coming back.
No doubt.
You need honesty, and you're going to find that at T.A. Mahoney's. Make sure to check them out on the web, on Facebook. You can check them out, tamahoneyco.com. Tell them Pewter Report sent you, and we would certainly appreciate that very much. We want to thank them for sponsoring the Pewter Nation podcast. Now, Ian, this is something, and I wish Trevor was between us, because you're not going to like what I have to say, my opinion of this. No, or maybe, I don't know, you may agree.
I might agree.
You might agree.
I might.
The best guard in the world, are they worthy of a top 10 pick?
Yes. The best guard in the world, yes.
All right, the best guard in the world. Okay, a Quentin Nelson from Notre Dame,
mm-hmm.
is he worthy of a top 10 pick? If the Buccaneers, if he's available at number 7, if your GM, Jason Light, he's on the board, maybe Saquon Barkley's on mm-hmm. the board, Derwin James is on the board, tell me your thoughts on a guy like on Quentin Nelson.
I've not studied him, okay? I've heard he's a hell of a football player. Mm-hmm. I did a podcast with Chris Landry, who I really like. I like what he has to say.
Right.
I don't like what a lot of people have to say, okay? Right. I listen to him, and I can tell... He is very versed, and he does his homework. He says he's one of two pro-ready players.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, we don't know if that's going to be the case. But Saquon Barkley, if we're talking about marketing and where the Buccaneers are, they can't pass him.
Right.
No way. It is, when you bring in Nelson, it might make you a better team, but we still have to sell tickets.
Yeah.
We still have to look sexy. A guard probably won't, because we all in agreement that if the Bucks don't go to the playoffs, everybody's gone.
Yeah.
Now, this who probably won't help you is a rookie offensive lineman. He probably won't, because I was a rookie offensive lineman.
Mm-hmm.
I started 16 games, but I wasn't that good.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what level you're going to be. As a rookie, you're not going to be a good NFL football player.
Right.
But you could do it as a running back, though.
Yeah.
Could do it as a running back.
That's true.
So a running back can help your team immediately. So if those other players are there, a defensive end, they probably won't do well the first year.
No, they won't.
You know, wide receivers can excel the first year. Running back can excel. Defensive backs can
excel. We've seen quarterbacks the last few years. Carson Wentz.
But not a lot, though.
Right. Well, I mean, not a high percentage.
Yes.
True.
But a running back, if a running back can play, he can play.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've also said this. I'm not trying to pick a running back in the first round, because you're really just renting somebody for a year and a half, maybe 2 years, and that's it. So when everybody was dogging out Jerry Jones for drafting all his offensive linemen, he looked brilliant afterwards, because you can put any running back behind them and they're going to be good. So I'm obviously biased towards having a great offensive line. And we definitely need help there.
Right.
There's no
doubt. And I completely, completely agree. They need to draft a guard, whether it be Quentin Nelson at number 7 or some guys down the road a little bit. This is a fairly – and did you do the guard center preview, Trevor, or did Scott
yes,
do that?
Yes, yeah. I did it.
And talk about some of the guys. Let's take Quentin Nelson off the board. How big of a drop-off is it from Quentin Nelson, who everybody says is a plug-and-play guy, a 10-year Pro Bowl kind of guy, and the number 2 guy? How big of a drop-off?
I mean, I don't think there's that big of a drop-off, just because I think interior line, you have assignments. Correct me if I'm ever wrong here, because you actually play the position. But with interior offensive line, it's, yeah, you got to be good, but it's a lot more about chemistry, too. If you don't understand chemistry, I don't think it really works that well.
Well, chemistry is important.
Yeah.
But you still have to be able to block somebody one-on-one.
Oh, for sure. You know, you definitely got to have talent. But that's, I mean, to your point, like,
from one
Quentin
to two.
Nelson, Quentin Nelson is good, but, like, I think Will Hernandez is good. I think Isaiah Wynn's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think Frank Ragnow is really good from Arkansas. Like, those are guys who Frank Ragnow played guard and center. He's played center more recently. But I mean, people don't talk about him plenty as being a, you know, we talk about the Bucks trading back, if they end up trading back, and I think that might be a perfect scenario for the Bucks, because if you get to, I mean, let's just say, let's just use the Patriots as an example. You're picking like early 20s, late 20s, early 30s or whatever.
Right.
You could have a guy like Will Hernandez or a guy like Frank Ragnow that you could pick either one, and those are, you know, guys that you would want. I mean, Hernandez started, I think, 49 out of 49 games from when he was a freshman to when he was a senior.
Right.
And so he was a beast in that regard. Frank Ragnow, when he was a sophomore, was elected a team captain and was a team leader from when he was a sophomore. And, you know, he's another guy who's just – both of those guys are just bulldozers. Mm-hmm. You know, there's dudes who will – you know, the old cliche, play through the whistle, all that kinds of stuff. And so, like, the highlights, the Quentin Nelson is great, but, like, to answer your question, the difference between picking Quentin Nelson at 7 and picking Will Hernandez or Frank Ragnow later in the draft.
30 or 31.
I would take later in the draft.
Right.
I would just, it's just the value of the jump is so, picking Nelson is not going to be 23 picks of a difference better than picking one of those
guys. You just don't see a lot of guards go in the top 10. Obviously, elite tackles and things like that, you see more of that. But you just don't see – I mean, and I use the example. I couldn't tell you who the Eagles guards were last year and they won the Super Bowl. I couldn't tell you who the Patriots guards were. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you the last 5 Hall of Fame guards that have been inducted into it.
Sure.
You know, that's not to minimize it because it's all important. You've got to have 5 guys working in good unison. Ian, real quick, we're going to get off the podcast pretty soon and let you go, but just real quick, talk about what and I'm bringing this up because Quentin didn't run the 40 time, and some of the talk behind the scenes was because he was going to run a really, really slow 40 time, and so he's already looked at as a top 10 guy. There's no need at the combine to run,
mm-hmm.
but how is there any correlation between foot speed, 40 yard time, and being successful at a guard position? I certainly see it at wide receiver and cornerback and those mm-hmm. positions. But as far as an interior lineman, is there any correlation between success? And what kind of 40 time did you run? Do you remember your 40 times?
Oh, I remember everything. ever. Like, seriously. There's so many different, you know, levels of linemen. And the reason why I don't think – I played guard. The reason why I don't think a guard is as important as a tackle or a center, because you can move a center to guard. You can move a tackle to guard. You can't move somebody to center or tackle. Right. You can't do it. You can't move a guard. If somebody said, Ian, you're playing tackle, I would say, no, I'm not. And 1 year they tried to move me at center. I couldn't do it. Right. I just couldn't do it. As far as your speed, him not running at the combine, I don't give a rat's ass. I really don't.
Say he ran a 5.9, which would have been the slowest. I mean,
if it's 5.9, then we're getting to a point where that's just molasses slow.
Right.
And if you have to block a Sakeem Griffin or something, mm-hmm. you'll be in trouble.
Right.
Okay, so, you know, you don't want that. I don't know if it'll be that glaring.
Right. I don't know either.
But then he played for Notre Dame. I mean, he played against some really good athletes. And it would have been glaring to that point. Myself, I got through because of my love for the game and my athletic ability.
Mm-hmm.
If me and Paul Gruber raced, I'd beat Paul Gruber by 5 yards. Easily.
Mm-hmm.
That me and Tony Mayberry raced, I beat him by 8 yards. But we were different football players.
Sure.
I mean, I ran a 4.8 in college, okay? Now I'd probably run a 6.8, but like when I got to the combine, I ran a 5 flat, which I thought was slow. And I watched the combine now; it would be fast now.
Yeah.
That combine turf is slow, by the way. Like I ran a 4.8 the week before I did the combine, and I ran a 5 flat there. Unless your numbers are glaringly bad, I don't think numbers are that important. I'd rather put on a film and just evaluate that way.
And that's really what it's all about. I mean, again, I think we all get so caught up in watching the combine, and there's something to be said for that. But, you know, as Sapp was famous for saying, and millions of football players have said it, the tape don't lie, right?
Never lies.
I mean, it's never there. Lies.
Yeah, Warren Sapp, for a great example. I remember being at an away game, and Tony Mayberry was my roommate throughout my career. And he was in the bathroom, and I'm watching the Miami Hurricanes play. And I watched 4 plays. And I said, Tony came out, I go, come here. I go, watch this guy. I think it was 76, maybe.
Yeah, 76.
I go, watch number 76. He's going to make this play. He was on the backside of like a trap, and he made the play. And Tony goes, who is that? I go, I have no idea. But this son of a bitch can be blocked. that's why what I'm hearing when you said it earlier, well, this person has problems against thick players. This guy has problems against length. Then you can't play.
Right.
And when I hear a defensive lineman, he's good, but he's slow off the ball. Or you can't really do that in the league.
Yeah.
If you're slow off the ball in the league, you're dead.
Yeah.
You got to come off the ball. I don't know if I've ever seen a better takeoff than Gerald McCoy. Never. Warren Sapp was in this room one day, and I said, Gerald McCoy's takeoff is way better than yours. And I thought we were going to fight. He goes, what the hell are you talking about? I go, McCoy's get off is better than yours. And he was pissed. I said, no, after that, he ain't doing what you did.
Right.
Like you rarely saw anybody get their hands on Warren Sapp. It's hard to get your hands on that son of a gun.
Yeah.
And then when you did get your hands on him, he was a lot stronger than he appeared.
Mm-hmm.
And he played with great leverage. And he was built like Gerald McCoy is it's almost night and day, but if you want to compare those
two.
That's true. Because Warren Sapp's one of the better athletes I've seen at any position. And he you can't tell me he couldn't have played guard. You can't tell me he couldn't have played tight end.
Mm-hmm.
He might have been able to play linebacker. He was that good of an athlete.
Right.
So that's what he preyed on. McCoy is more of a specimen, long arms, all those kind of things. I think some of the injuries he's had early in his career has taken away from some things as well. Because when I'm talking about people running the ball near somebody and not making him play, he never reaches his arms out because he tore his biceps early.
Yep.
So he doesn't reach his arms out. That's just conditioning.
Yeah. You know, I told you this on your podcast. I remember talking to Warren one day. We were talking about Gerald because they have a good relationship and they go back and forth and spend some time on the phone back and forth. But Warren said, look, he said, I was a great athlete. He says, but if I would have had Gerald McCoy's body with my athleticism, they would have banned me from the NFL.
Absolutely.
They would have banned me from the NFL. There's no way they would have kicked me out of the league because I would have killed quarterbacks, literally.
But I'm going to say this. Warren is built a little bit like me, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're just about the same height. He's kind of stocky and kind of dumpy like I am. I had guys behind me that were 6'7", 350.
Right.
If I was 6'7", 350, I wouldn't be as big of a dog. I wouldn't have to be.
That's true. You didn't that.
That's
a good point.
If you grew like when I played sports growing up, people would look at me like that little short fat guy.
Right.
And that would inspire me. If I heard say that little short fat guy.
Yeah.
By the end of the day, I would like to have you crying. That makes me feel
when
good.
You were the last kid picked on pickup basketball game.
No,
was a mistake.
No, nobody. I'm never last pick on anything. No. Because everybody's gonna know that, regardless what the sport is, pick Ian. It's just a good idea.
Yeah.
Because you don't really want to go against me.
Right.
Cause especially if it's a physical thing. Because I'm gonna put my shoulder into you.
Right.
And I've had this happen to me in basketball many times. I remember being at the old iHeart building, used to be Bally's, and this guy, there was some football players watching, and this one guy is trying to clown me. You can't play basketball. I go, give me the ball then. I go, let's play to 11. And he looks at me and goes, you won't touch the ball. And I scored 11 straight baskets on him. And he was talking trash.
Right.
Now, I really like to win.
Right.
I like to win. I don't like to lose. And I'm going to write down that Jason Light saying because I like it.
Yeah,
I like it.
Well, man, this has been fun. We could go another 45 minutes on this. This is great. I've still got a million questions for you. We're going to try and, Trevor, let's try and encourage Scott not to show up for some other podcast so we can come harass him. First of all,
Scott.
You got a great great man cave here. You don't call it a man cave. What do you call it?
This is Dignitary Headquarters.
Dignitary Headquarters. Yes. I call it one amazing man cave. There's a Miss Pac-Man terrible. Machine back here. We're looking at a big screen right here. We're going to come, and I told you last time I did your podcast, we're going to come over and when the season gets going and check out some film. I'd like to get your perspective on some things from being a former offensive lineman. I'd like to get your ideas on some things.
You got the All-22?
Yeah.
This is going to be the year I have to get it. Because I sit there and I watch the Buccaneer game over and over with the TV version,
broadcast. No,
and I can't do that.
Trevor does his cover three, and he uses the All-22 clips. And it's just
I can't use TV. No way.
It's
just
impossible.
Phenomenal to see.
Sure.
You know, and you can it's a great thing. So we'll bring our All-22 password over here and accidentally leave it, if you know what I mean.
When is this airing?
This is going to air later today. It'll be up, hour or so when you get home you'll have it up, Trevor?
Yeah. It'll be up.
Well, if anybody out there, a Flavor of Tampa Bay, we have a big event coming up at Cheval Country Club on Saturday.
Saturday night.
It's a free
Saturday
event.
All day.
Actually, it's from noon to 10. It's a free event. If anybody wants to come, if you want to get VIP tickets, flavoroftampabayfest.com. And there's going to be some big willies out there, man.
I've been to a couple of Ian's shindigs. Mm-hmm. They're not for the faint of heart.
No, sir.
He doesn't do anything third or second rate. Yeah. It's first class all the way.
And
so.
Good scenery, too.
There's definitely.
Yes,
I'm not saying a word about that. Wink, wink. There's definitely some scenery to be seen. But, man, we really appreciate you joining us
today, Ian.
Guys. We're going to bug you some more during the season, if you don't mind, man,
no,
and get your perspective on things.